Right. Well, welcome to seminar number three of the afternoon. And if my wonderful panel would like to put their videos on so we can see you. Welcome to seminar one, stream one, sorry, seminar three. This is the seminar stream about foundations for planting and pioneering. And we're really pleased to be in this third seminar, which is about being ascending church. So before I introduce our panel, just a few bits of information for you. So we are recording this session, so just so that you know, but if you are not in the panel, then you won't appear on the recording anywhere, and neither will anything that you put in the chat. So please do interact with us via the chat and also via the Q&A. So you'll see at the bottom of the screen, you've got two options for Q&A and for chat. We'd love to hear from you, what your questions are, from what Al brings, and any questions that you've got for Ruth and Malcolm as well. And likewise in the chat, just feel free to put in anything that you would like to reflect on, anything that you find inspiring. And finally, just a reminder that not only can you add into the chat and into the Q&A, but also you can add onto your own social media. And the hashtags for today are #MultiplyX2021 and #CCX. And the handle for the Gregory Centre is TheGregoryCCX. So, my name's Abby Todd. I am a church leader in Northeast London, actually not that far from either Malcolm or Al, kind of in between the two. And I'm really pleased to be hosting this seminar. And with us today, we have Al Gordon. Al leads Saint, which is a fast-growing church in East London with six locations, with a vision to build cathedrals of creativity in every neighborhood. And we also have Ruth Bushyager. Hi, Ruth. Great to have you here. Ruth is the Bishop of Horsham and also has got experience of leading St. Paul's in Dorking, which is a large church. And we also have Malcolm MacDonald. Welcome, Malcolm, who is a vicar of St. Mary's Loughton. So, without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Al. Al's going to start us off with 15 minutes or so of thought and content, and then we will be able to have our panel discussion. So please do get active in the Q&A box in the chat. And but for now, over to you, Al.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be with you. I don't know if you can hear me or see me okay. I'm sorry, it's another Zoom. I feel like we should all apologize for every Zoom minute we now take of our lives. But it's great to be with you. And if I sort of lose the focus during what I'm going to share with you, it's because I have behind me on the floor a puppy who is asleep with her toys. So if I kind of if I start sort of twitching, it's because I've got a hairy, small hairy animal behind me who's wanting attention, but she's asleep right now. Listen, I want to try not take 15 minutes because every minute saved on Zoom is worth an hour in the real world. To echo what Abby said, I know you speak on behalf of Malcolm, Ruth, and Abby, we would love your interaction. And there's nothing worse than coming on and having expert opinions when you think that actually makes no difference to my life. The question I'm carrying is how do I deal with my difficult, insert the blank, church warden, husband, I don't know what it might be. What I want to do today is frame a little bit around this question. And I want us to go to Isaiah chapter 6. And I was going to talk about some different stuff. And I looked at it this morning. I thought it looks really naff and really bad. So I've reworked what I was going to share. And Isaiah chapter 6, I don't need you to go there. And we're not going to do a Bible study. But it's interesting that it's the call of Isaiah. And I've been really struck by a few things that come out of this passage with regards to how we think about church planting and church leadership. First thing is this, if you're a writey down kind of type person, I'm going to share five quick thoughts, and they're progressive in terms of what I found helpful in just my experiences in my life of how to develop church planting plans, how to make things happen. And these have been sort of tested in the experience of how to get it wrong. I've got it all wrong lots and lots and lots. So these are things I wish I'd done in certain places. But five kind of steps, if you like, that I'm trying to do when I think about church planting and developing leaders to plant. Number one, vision. Number one, vision. So if you look at Isaiah 6, verse 1, Isaiah says this, "I saw the Lord." Vision is about seeing a vision for something, seeing a vision of God in Isaiah's case, but developing a vision for the place that you're called to, developing a vision that's God-centered. And that's really key. You know, there's nothing more depressing than a sort of movement in the church or an initiative from central office when it's not of God. It's got to be of God. We've got to be obedient to what we see God doing. Whatever tradition you're in, whatever style or context you're in, God will be at work. So where do you see God at work? That's the key question. You know, where do you see the Lord? And Isaiah starts with that thing, "I saw the Lord, I saw the Lord." And so I'd encourage us to develop a vision for church planting, a vision for our community. What does it look like? And like Isaiah teaches us, all good visions start in prayer. They're born in that place of encountering God, whether it's in reflection, whether it's in times of retreat, whatever floats your boat, but go meet with God. And I found that moving to Hackney, we moved here five years this autumn. You know, the first sort of chapter for me was really about prayer walking. I used to come up here on my day off and walk around Hackney and get to know the postcodes and beat the bounds of the parish because I pray and walk and, you know, listen to songs on my phone and walk some more and pray some more. And as I began to pray, I began to notice things that seemed to be close to God's heart, the broken on the streets, the vulnerable, kids and gangs, addicts, estates, stuff that where there was real deprivation, and then people who were creating beautiful art and fashion and, you know, diverse talents. So in that place of vision and encounter with God, you'll find that God will often give you an imagination for your neighborhood. And that's the first thing, is allow God to dream in that place of vision. And then as you're there, write it down, articulate it. The most potent tool leaders have is the ability to articulate vision. So if you can't tell me why you're doing what you're doing in 30 seconds, give up what you're doing. You know, you need to learn to articulate your vision, because Jesus does this really quickly. He talks to people, says, "Will you come and fish with me, men? You know, will you come and leave your life behind and do this?" We've got to get good at articulating the vision we have for the places we're called to lead. So first thing is vision, articulating a vision, learning to articulate it. When none of us are like born naturally good at this. So like watch people who are good at this, read, and make sure your vision is about your place. You haven't copy and pasted, you know, Malcolm's vision. You know, it's not gonna be the same as what God's calling you to do in your place. So number one, what is God doing? What is the vision? What do you see God doing? And how can you articulate that? Second thing is relationship. If you notice verse 3 in Isaiah chapter 6, is this, the seraphim were calling to one another. I think there's something in that about the need for us to do this not alone, to do it together as a team. You know, if you want an equation, if you're a mathematician, think of it like this: vision plus relationship equals mission. Vision plus relationship equals mission. And spend time investing in relationships with the people you're working with. Spend time having dinner with people, or if you're allowed to sit around the table with them, eat with them, share your food, share your lives. And what you'll find is that, you know, you're going to need friends around you who point out to you that you can't do it on your own. I mean, like Isaiah, verse 5, Isaiah's response to the community of God and the thing that's happening that he sees is, "Woe is me." He realizes he hasn't got all the skill sets. He's not holy. He's not able to do all the things that God is able to do. And that's a key revelation that comes from relationship, is that we all need those people in our lives who can, when we're thinking about doing something new, or we want to revitalize a parish, or we want to see things change, we need people, friends, who can walk with us on the road, who can point out to us when we're taking the wrong turn, who can sharpen our thinking and love us and challenge and hold a mirror up to us. And point out when we've got it wrong and when we're being an idiot, and when our ego is leading rather than the Holy Spirit or the kind of call to serve. So relationship number two, like vision plus relationship. Then the third thing is a kind of nebulous thing, but it's values, culture, the sense of if vision is your purpose, relationship is your vision, is your why. Relationship is your who. This is the values, is your what. Articulate your what. You know, who are you? What do you stand for? What does it feel like to be around you and the team you're building? What are your key values? Isaiah, again, stretching the scriptural analogy a little bit, but Isaiah says, I have unclean lips and I'm among a people of unclean lips. They understood the culture, at least. Isaiah looked around and said, look, you know, we can't do this. We're unclean lipped. That's negative culture, if you like. But what is the kind of church that you long to see? And what is the kind of family you long to be in? And that's really important to articulate. And if you do nothing else but build vision, build relationship, and build the culture, you'll find you're 90% of the way to seeing things begin to change and begin to happen. So vision plus relationship plus culture is seriously powerful. That's how revolutions happen. Fourth thing is mission, or I guess strategy. And I don't want you to confuse mission with the sort of the mission of God or being missional. I mean, a really specific, a plan, like a strategic plan. That's not like kind of something that you fill in for head office. I mean, like, how are you going to make this happen? You know, what is it you want to see happen? Put some numbers on it. Put some money in the margin next to it. Put some people there. Put some dates and times. Be really specific. You know, it's interesting, again, going back to Isaiah, God has a plan. He has a strategic plan. And he's looking to make that plan happen. So he says in verse 8, whom shall I send? In other words, he's like, hey, we're going to do something. I want to do something new. And the unfolding of Isaiah is that new thing. See, I'm doing a new thing. It's a great theme. But the point is, he says he's looking for people to carry that vision and that relationship, that culture, into a strategic execution, you know, to make it happen. And that's really important. And sometimes we start at point 4 and we get this bit wrong. We say, hey, we've got a mission action plan. That's enough. But we miss, what's the vision? What's who are the people? What's the culture? And if you notice, Jesus spends 3 years building vision, relationships, and culture before he sends them out at the end in the Great Commission. So mission and strategy is kind of the fourth step. And the fifth and final step to actually go do it, you know, to execute. So verse 8, Isaiah says, here I am, send me. He signs up for the CCX, you know, he signs up for the growth track, or, you know, he writes that dangerous email to the area bishop or the archdeacon and says, I'm up for doing this. I'm up for planting. I'm up for making something happen. And I've found that, you know, this is the most dangerous part of this, because you'll know what the church is like. As soon as you start wanting to do a plan and make something happen, you know, none of us expect the doors to open. And we've just found, like, that's been the biggest stretch for me. And I felt most of my depth when I've said, like, I think we've got a vision. I think we've got some great people. We're training up and we've got this sense of who we are and what we want to build. And we think we could see something happen. But then you get a bishop or somebody in authority in your denomination area who says, okay, go make it happen. And that's the point where I have to, like, go home and, like, sit quietly in a dark corner of a room and think, oh, panic attack, I've actually got to make this happen, or I've got to actually, you know, move from talking about it to executing on it. The reality in church life, as in all areas of life, is that there's never a shortage of great ideas, never a shortage of great people. There is a failure often to actually execute. And that's so often what means that these things don't happen, is because 90% of plans don't become reality, not because of failure of vision, but because of a failure of execution. So execution is like the key thing. Make it happen. Go do it. Put your theology, put your mission, put your practice into action. You know, that's a crazy moment when you think, okay, now we're going to make this happen. So that's a little, I'm going to come into land there. And, you know, there's not time to talk about all things we can talk about. I could take like another 15 minutes talking about things that have gone horribly wrong. But I wanted to give you the guys a 5-point framework for what we found helpful as we think about church partnerships, church planting, doing it together, having a great vision, having community around you, having a really strong sense of culture, having a really good strategic mission, and then getting on and doing it. And by the way, you know, every one of those stages is hard work. So make sure that you know, you don't take yourself too seriously and you don't think you're going to be the answer. Make sure you keep saying, woe is me, because then God will use you. So that's it. That's all I got. I hope that was helpful. Abby, back to you.
Oh, that's hugely helpful. My only disappointment is that your puppy didn't interrupt you, which is what I'm waiting for. But thank you so much. I'd love to start by, have I broken up a bit? Or am I still here?
Okay.
Everything's frozen. Toby, could you just drop me a message if I'm still here?
You're all good.
And I won't
hold back.
We
can hear you. You're good.
Okay, sorry. Lovely. Sorry. I just can't hear anyone else, so I'll press on anyway. Ruth and Malcolm, I'd love to start by hearing from you a little bit about your journeys to becoming sending churches, because I know that actually you've both been in sending churches, and now, Ruth, you've got a different kind of remit as a bishop to be overseeing church planting and stuff in your area in a different way. But Ruth, maybe you can start with you. What was the journey that you went on to become a sending church, and how much do you resonate with the things that Al's brought for us today? So helpful from Isaiah 6.
Yeah, thank you, Al. Isn't it amazing how God works? Because before I came to the seminar, I was on my sofa writing a sermon on Isaiah 6 for I'm ordaining priests this weekend. And the passage is Isaiah chapter 6. And that was the passage that God called me on way back when. So what a great passage. So I'm really thrilled to be back in it today. Yeah, so when I took over as the incumbent of St. Paul's Dorking, it was a medium-sized church that had been in sort of slow decline for some years numerically. Great church. And it was a kind of part A and a part B, if I can condense 6 years of leadership into about a minute's worth of content. So the first task was really to regroup. They'd done a very expensive, fantastic building project, but had got quite inward looking. So the first chapter of my time there was really about rebuilding, regrouping, getting the vision to be an outward looking vision, getting the finances, paying off the debts, all that sort of stuff, employing staff, building up the staff team, and getting the church on a trajectory of growth first. And that, when I arrived, I thought, that's the job here, is let's get this church growing bigger, and let's build a bigger church and have more services and more ministries and more alpha courses. And we did that, and God blessed it, and it was wonderful, and we saw this season of growth. And then I had a kind of wake-up call as to a complete change of gear, really, which was that the purpose of this growth and this health, this season of real vitality, was not to grow St. Paul's bigger and bigger and bigger. The purpose of the blessing was to change the vision of the church from being a growing church to being a resourcing church, to being a planting and a grafting church and a revitalizing church. So then we had a real change of gear, and we had the sort of leadership task of instilling quite a gear shift of vision into the church and into our direction of travel. And we had to sort of highlight the resourcing things that we were already doing, and really articulate. I love what Al said about the articulation of your vision, and really compellingly cast it, and prayerfully and fasting, you know, prayerfully casting that vision and saying, this is what God is calling us to be. And so from that new vision, we really upped our game, and we did some quite small things to resource other churches in the deanery and beyond. And then we sort of ramped it up, and we did a plant of a new congregation into the centre. And then we did a really sort of significant, quite sort of textbook classic church plant, grafting a new congregation into a vacant parish to the other side, and sending 40 members of the church and the curate off with their giving and with their skills and their gifts and everything. So I absolutely agree with what Al said about the various stages. I would say they're quite dynamic. I don't think Al was articulating a particularly linear thing. They came in a good order, and I agree it starts with God-given vision, with team building, getting your values and your culture right. But sometimes you keep having to circle back constantly to that vision, and you have to keep going back with the team, getting it strong, building trust, building vision and value and joy in the team, keep redressing culture issues and being willing to actually pick up when culture is not being honoured, and having the courage as the leader to say, no, that's not who we are. That's not the sort of emails we send. That's not the kind of conversation, you know, and keep picking people up and be willing to say, actually, if the values are going to mean anything, then we need to be willing to rebuke and challenge. And I'd say over all of it, the communication piece is really, really, really key in all directions. And in my experience, from what I've seen, a lot of planting work stumbles, if not fails, but certainly stumbles on communication issues.
So helpful, Ruth. Thanks so much. And amazing to hear about Isaiah 6, but also about the journey that you needed to take your church on. And I think so many in this watching this will be able to resonate with that kind of idea about shifting gears. And actually, it's quite hard, isn't it? I've been thinking a lot this week about like the initial push down on a pedal when you're starting to do something is huge, isn't it? Malcolm, how about you? Can you tell us a bit about your sending journey and what that's looked like for you? So I know you've been at St Mary's for 10 years or so.
Over 12 years now, really. And I had a very similar journey to what Ruth described. Arrived here with a real passion to grow the church, you know, wanted it to become a big church and loads of people to come to Christ. And, you know, we all want that, don't we? We all want to do that. But St Mary's Loughton, where I am, you know, we're not a big church. And I think it's quite a good thing to say that you don't have to be a big church to be a resource church. You just need a big mindset. And I think that's quite helpful because we're not a big church, but we have had that mindset shift. The mindset shift happened around about 2014-15 when we kind of came up, you know, the Lord gave us this phrase about moving from addition to multiplication. So people talk about this, you know, it's not your seating capacity, it's your sending capacity that really matters. And that was a big mindset shift for me, because to be honest, for the first 5 years here, I wasn't really that interested in church planting. That was for other people. But God really did something in my heart and in the heart of our PCC and another team here. And it was amazing. And we just got a real heart for sending and for being generous and for the mindset of kind of resourcing for the kingdom. So, you know, we've done one of the things I've noticed here that's been interesting is that we've done one where we've had one revitalization back in 2019. We revitalized the neighboring parish. We sent 12 people in that team because it wasn't a very big church in the beginning. We didn't want to swamp it. But we did that with curate and sending a team out. But something else I've noticed over this time in the mindset shift has been it's not just about church planting, it's also about people planting, because it's all about people. And I've noticed that since 2014, we've sent out from St. Mary's 10 people who are now in church leadership where they are. And they've been invested in and trained, and you know, we just planted people. And another thing, like Alan Hirsch talks about planting the gospel. We plant the gospel, we plant people, we plant congregations, we plant. And so it's not just, I don't want people to feel like a resource church just has to keep sending out 40 people if to be valid as a church plant. You can send out, you know, we've sent out people, even individuals, to, and they're now leading churches. So we're always looking for who's next. We're always looking for the next leaders and the next people to invest in. And we've been sought to be led by the Spirit in that. You know, sometimes I got my own plans, and actually when you look back on it, you realize it wasn't your plan that came to be. It was something completely different. So we seem to have ended up kind of going, going down the central line of in London, you know, in sending leaders that direction. But I thought I was going to go north and do stuff in the north of Epping Forest, but that hasn't really happened yet. But who knows? Maybe that's for another time. But there's one other thing, if I could just say, is in my experience as a leader of a resource church, I've needed a lot of support and advice and encouragement, because it has also, it's been a joy, but it's also been painful. Because with what we believe about leadership and raising people up and investing in people, friendship, partnership, sharing of life together, when you really do that with people, it is painful to then release them out. You know, it's not easy. And that's something that I think it's part of sacrificial love that God calls us to do in being resource churches and kingdom, a kingdom mindset. But, you know, yeah, so I really resonate with what Ruth was saying, and I'm really glad God has changed us from an addition church to a multiplication church.
Thanks, Malcolm, so much. There's so much in all that you've just said, and I, you know, can definitely attest to the impact of St. Mary's Latin. It's not a huge church, but actually it does have and continues to have a huge impact locally and beyond, in terms of who you're sending out. So thank you, Malcolm, but also just, you know, to anyone watching, it is an absolute reality. We've had a question from Phil. How can members of a planting church who don't feel they're called to go best support church planting? Al, can we come back to you on this one to start? What would you say?
It's a great question. Look, we're all called to church plant. We're all called to be part of God's mission, and planting the church is part of that, and helping encourage the partnership in the gospel, you know, is that. So I would say practically, you know, that's an amazing blessing to your church. If you feel called, I find that the challenge always when you plant things is all the leaders want to go on the new thing. And people who can build the base and build the core and build the house, they're like, whoever that person is worth like 10 planters, honestly, because they are going to help you build the body of the mother church or the sending church. So super important. I mean, number one, love wildly, you know, love and be generous and don't be precious about giving your best away. And that involves having people around the center who can help multiply and train up leaders and love new people and help replicate the culture and DNA. Secondly, be super prayerful for those who are going. So pray, like pray powerfully and faithfully. You know, if you can be like the big prayer as people go, they feel loved and prayed and supported, that's going to make a massive difference. And the third thing I'd say would be massively radically generous, you know, double your giving. You know, if you give regularly towards your church community, the best thing you can do is to give more and above and exceedingly more, because then you enable church plan to happen and you enable the center to stay growing. So it's a brilliant question. And I would say, like, love people, help build the core, build it all up, be generous, pray, and you will be a huge blessing. You know, you're as a key part of making this happen.
Ruth, what would you add to that? I know that you were.
Yeah, this is a great question. I'd add to what Al said. Don't underestimate the impact you can have in the culture of positivity towards the planting work, because you've always got the people who are casting the vision, the key leaders, and people who will kind of buy into that vision, others who will watch it a bit more skeptically with their hands folded and sit back in their chair a bit, other people sadly sometimes who are going to gripe about that vision, critique it, sometimes be the sort of vision destroyers around the fringe. And if you're going to stay, then don't underestimate the power that you can have informally when you're at coffee at church, when you're at small group, life group, when you're at PCC, to be the voice in the room that says, this is fantastic, this is of God, and be the one that is the first to stick your hands up and say, I am totally on board with this vision, I'm in favour, and here's why, and help replicate the articulation of the vision. And if you're not one of the key leaders of the church, even better, because it models to others about buy-in. and then demonstrate your buy-in, because you can quite often anticipate the gaps. I often think when planting is like that you get in trees, you get in forests, you get oaks of righteousness. It's a biblical thing, oaks of righteousness. And at St. Paul's Dorking, when we planted, it was like God removed from our forest these oaks of righteousness. And they were big people with big gifts, and they took up great space in the church, and God moved them elsewhere to be fruitful. And then we had like gaps in the forest, and it was great. The sunlight comes in, the saplings can grow, and that's awesome. But sometimes you have to sort of, if you're going to stay behind, you can anticipate those gaps and say, well, hang on a minute, if Jason and Kate are leaving, well, go to your PCC or your trustees or your vicar and say, do you need an extra volunteer in the kids group just for 18 months or just for 12 while the saplings grow? Or actually, gosh, if you're losing your treasurer, then does the finance team need a bit of all those practical gaps where you could say, I'm going to stay and I'm going to step up and step into. And as Al's saying, you know, be part of that culture of regrouping after the plant has happened and say, no, I'm going to seriously recommit to the vision of this church.
Sure. Can I also just say, I think it's really important that people feel called to go or stay. You know, it's not just people are called to go, people are also called to stay. And I've been really blessed by various people, you know, when we've done things, who've said to me, actually, we feel called to stay. And it's not the easy option, actually. You know, in some ways, it's the least sort of sexy thing to do is to just stay. and there's nothing unspiritual about saying, no, I'm going to stay. It's not the most godly thing to do, to do the most radical thing. It's actually radical to be faithful. And I think I've been really encouraged by people who've got a vision for us to be a resource church, and that means they're going to stay. I've also, one other thing about people who stay is that we don't really use the language of sending our best, because actually, you know, we just drop that, because you've got great people staying and going. We try to talk about who's called to go and who's called to stay, because you don't want to devalue the people who are staying either. You know, they are amazing and we want to build them up just like everyone else.
Really helpful. Thanks, Malcolm. I wonder whether, Ruth, you could speak a bit about encouraging planting in a rural situation, because I know actually in Dorking it's kind of in and around rural areas. And Malcolm, I don't know if you have thoughts about that as well in terms of your vision of planting into the forest, not quite literally, but it seems like, I don't know, there's a lot around city centres and kind of more populous areas. But Ruth, tell us about your experience in maybe a different kind of a context or different towns.
Yeah, well, Dorking is a sort of small market town, but the deanery was very rural, amazingly rural, because you don't really think particularly of Surrey as a particularly rural area. And the diocese I'm now in Chichester is predominantly rural areas. And actually the whole, I mean, I'm speaking from a Church of England point of view, and I recognise this is a massively, amazingly ecumenical conference today. We've been hearing from such inspiring leaders. But a lot of the time, in many places, the Church of England is the only church left in rural areas. So it's a massive opportunity for us to revitalise those churches. And I would say a couple of things that are really key to rural church planting and grafting. One goes back to a refrain that we've heard a lot today, which is about size, that we must not get into the mentality that the only churches that can be really with skin in the game here are the really big churches, because generally in rural areas you do not get churches of 700-800 people. And actually to have a vision that every church can be a planting church, every church can certainly be a resourcing church. Mm-hmm. And not just in terms of money and their giving towards a diocese, but thinking very generously about the people that they've got, the gifts that they've got, and the needs of the other churches around them. And it can look really modest. It can look like a church that says, well, we've got spare musicians. can anybody be blessed with musicians? Or we've got actually, we're particularly in our parish, we've got people who are great with finance. Could anyone be blessed? Because some churches are hugely struggling for a treasurer or a safeguarding lead or these key roles that in some of our rural areas aren't filled. And it might not look like church planting, but it can look like resource church, just by saying we could send a team. And to think outside the Sunday box and to think in terms of fresh expressions and working together, particularly I would say around children and youth ministry, and actually saying, look, I think schools are massively strategic. And in so many places, you might have a church school or a non-church school, but they will be the catchment area will actually involve a lot of churches. And you could say, actually, our strength is always together, isn't it? Our strength is always in unity, in the gospel, together, and saying, well, actually, here are seven parishes, and we all have people in our parishes that feed into this one school. So what would it look like for us all to plant a worshiping community on a Sunday at 4 o'clock in the school hall? And that's much more doable than any one church saying, we need to be big enough and rich enough and well-resourced enough to do that. But actually, that's the sort of thing I'd be encouraging to see along rural lines, that strategic kind of joined up thinking as one household of faith together.
Thank you, Ruth.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Ruth's saying. Like we've struggled to do the classic form of church planting. You know, further north, we're the suburbs of London, and further north is into Epping Forest properly. And, you know, we've looked at ways we could go further north into smaller communities, villages and so on. It's just tough with, you know, in a Church of England context, finances, working with the diocese, it doesn't always line up in the way that works, especially with funding. But this what Ruth's talking about, the relational stuff, the sharing your resources, being generous, we do that all. We love doing that, you know, with preachers, leaders. Just raise up preachers in your congregation, but don't keep them all to yourself. Spread them out, you know, wherever you go. You know, we've done the last preaching thing we did, I had 20 people here who all want to be preachers, and so you just send them out various places. You know, that's often what people, this rural community, you know, churches need that. And yeah. So send them out, plant people. It doesn't all have to be the classic, you know, the classic church planting. It can be very creative.
I love that. And that's such a theme that's actually come across the whole day, isn't it? Actually, about the diversity in planting and diversity in kind of models. And not only just models, just almost responding to the needs of what's there with whatever's needed. We don't have loads of time left. Can you imagine? We're kind of cracking through. One of the things that two things. So you can choose which one to answer, or you can try and do a very short answer with both things. We had a really interesting discussion, didn't we, about the pain of sending when we were planning. And I just kind of, we don't have loads of time to get into it, but I just wanted to mention it. And I just wonder if maybe one person would want to speak to that and just kind of the reality, like the difficulty of sending people who are really called. And then the second thing is just like your parting wisdom, really, for churches who might want to shift their culture. How would you help people to kind of do that first press on the pedal that is just like takes so much energy? Al, could you lead on for us with that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is sort of self-evident in that, you know, you can't give without it costing. But it's a different kind of pain. It's not a sort of I think it's a bit like, says he with no experience, this childbirth. You know, when my wife gave birth to our three children, it was painful, but it was new life. It was part of giving something, creating something wonderful, and really painful, particularly for my wife, I should add. And I think it's like that with church planting. It's never nice. We've just given one of my key leaders away into a new role in the kind of wider church. And I've sort of had my last cup of coffee with him today, and I came out of the meeting feeling really depressed, thinking, oh, I should have, like, when they asked me for a reference, I should have told them that he was like an axe murderer, because it's really hard when you've lived with loved people and you've built your relationship. I talk about relationship and the importance of relationship and vision. You know, the counter side to that is when you do give people away, it costs and it's painful. And, you know, we have to keep looking at Jesus, who, you know, the Father doesn't hold him back, right? He says, God so loved the world that he gave. You know, and I think that's the key to church planting. If you give, you can't outgive God. It's not a, this isn't a strategic survival mechanism for the church. This is obedience to God's nature, is that we would give ourselves away. And so that is costly. It is painful. It is messy. But it's worth it. It's worth it because you can't outgive God. When you give yourself away, he promises to give in return. And so I find myself, you know, sort of, I feel like I'm pouring myself out and giving leaders away, but then new leaders turn up the next day, and not always the next day. There's sometimes a little bit of a time where I have to remember where I put everything and ask where are the stoles hanging in what cupboard. But the point is, you know, God is always faithful, right?
Thank you.
I think it's okay to talk about it with churches. You know, we share, I'm quite open about it. Be vulnerable with your church and say, this hurts, but actually, this is the kingdom of God. I mean, what were we expecting? You know, it hurts to be a disciple, but it's good. So I try to be quite open, but I'm also really aware we need support and encouragement. And we all think to ourselves sometimes, are we nuts in doing this? Surely there's another way of doing this. But it is, be vulnerable, be open, we need encouragement. So, you know, find encouragement wherever you can.
Yeah, and my answer, I'm going to try and bridge both questions with one answer, which is somebody wrote a book on healthy churches, and they said sort of point number four, whatever, was healthy churches face the cost of change and growth. They face the cost of change and growth. And in my leadership, that's the thing. It applies every day. Are we going to face the cost of change and growth? And as a leader, you want to put before your people the alternative. The alternative is we'll stagnate, our discipleship will shrink, our vision will shrink, we'll be covered in the sin of complacency, and it's actually, that's the path to death. So do you want the path to death, or do you want the path to life? So shall we become the Dead Sea, or shall we become the streams of living water flowing through this church? It's far more exciting to face the cost of change and growth and to go for it, because that's where God is. So it's about the excitement of following God where God is, and not just saying, let's build up the walls and let's build up our bank account and sit on some reserves and get fat and have fewer and fewer roles for more and more people. It's just not a healthy model. And the more we give away, and the more generous, you know, we're just following after the heart of God and the ways of God and the kingdom of God. And so although it hurts and it's really painful, I don't think it was like childbirth. For me, it honestly felt like amputation. The day we commissioned those 40 people, I was wrecked, absolutely wrecked by it. Nothing prepared me for the pain of the amputation. But actually, childbirth is better, because then it's new life and it's healthy and everything, and that transplant growth. But actually, the pain is where Jesus is to be found, and the struggle is where he's found. And the joy, therefore, it's all how the kingdom of God works. So you either lead your people into it, or you just sort of recoil from the courage that's needed, and actually, you know, sit and get fat and complacent and shrink. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's compelling to me, which is the best way.
Ruth, what an image to end on. It's a stark contrast, and I think we all know what side of that we want to be on. Thank you, Ruth. Thank you, Malcolm. Thank you, Al, so, so much. It's been brilliant. This is the end of all of our seminar streams, so do go back to the main session now, because there's a final wrap-up and commissioning as well. So thank you for joining us. Sorry if we didn't get to your question, and God bless you. Bye.